Hi everyone, this is Beck, producer of Talking to Grandma. We're taking a break from our season with alumni to bring back one of our favorite episodes, a conversation with Dr. Lizette Sukso, who shares her beautiful journey of reconnecting with her heritage language, Aymara. We're revisiting the story because it captures the heart of a new initiative we're launching, From Roots to Cuentos. It's a storytelling opportunity for Indigenous authors and artists of Abya Yala and Latin America to create bilingual and trilingual children's books that reflect their language and cultures. The program runs from November to February and includes mentorship and publishing support from Lizette herself. If this episode resonates with you, or you know someone whose story deserves to be heard, applications are open until October 15th, 2025. You can learn more and apply at the link in our show notes. Now let's revisit this powerful conversation with Dr. Lizette Sukso.
Welcome to the podcast, Lizette. We're happy to have you joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
We like to start our conversations with hearing a little bit about your journey with your heritage language. If there's been any story of language loss or preservation, what has your experience been like with your heritage language?
So when I was thinking about this and preparing for this conversation, one of the things that jumped out to me was I'm experiencing this kind of on two levels. So the first is growing up with Spanish as my first language, but then going to school at around age 3 and essentially stopping all of my Spanish because of school, because I was growing up in a community that was non-Spanish speaking, mostly not Latino at the time. That continued for many years as I was growing up until my parents decided to send me to Bolivia for a summer, which I resisted wholeheartedly because it would mean time away from my home community here. But really that I would say is a story of learning and then relearning my language, which, you know, begins at one level with Spanish. And then more recently, it's a story also and a journey around learning another language that is very important to my family, which is Aymara, which is our indigenous language, the language of my people, my ethnicity, our culture, and which really is a language that my parents, their parents, my grandparents, and all the generations back grew up mostly speaking, and which I had almost no exposure to as a child, other than my parents, if they had a moment to where they didn't want me to understand something in English or Spanish, that I would hear. And subsequently on trips to Bolivia that I would hear my grandmother or my tías, tíos speaking, but it was never something that I maybe knew two words. If that. So this is, for me, this journey has been about mostly reconnecting with my heritage language, which is Spanish, and in particular, now that I'm a mom and making decisions around how I want to raise my son in a multilingual, multicultural home. And most recently, within the last couple of months, about my own learning of Aymara and what that's meant for me, what that's meant for my relationship with my parents too, and what that's meant to include my son in that process as well.
Wow, that's so powerful and beautiful. I think, you know, so many people throughout Latin America have been disconnected from their indigenous roots and their languages. And I think it's beautiful that you have this kind of reconnection on two levels of Spanish and Aymara. When did you start to think about reconnecting with your heritage indigenous language? When did that come into the picture? And how old were you? When did it become more present? How long have you been working on it? And how has it affected your sense of identity? I throw a lot of questions at you. Just feel free to pick one or start wherever you like.
Yeah, sure. So the first time I would say I gave Aymara the attention as a learner, truly as a learner, and in the space with a teacher, Yetichiri, was when I studied abroad. So I made the decision to study abroad in Bolivia, because at the time as a college student, I was interested in moving back home for me, which is Bolivia, which is probably the subject of another podcast, because my parents' journey was, their whole journey is about leaving Bolivia. And so when I told them that I wanted to go back, they were like, wait, what? But being able to study abroad there and live there for 6 months was incredible. And as part of my study abroad, I took a semester's worth of Aymara. And so I would say that was the first time I sat in a classroom with a teacher, with other students, in a setting where I was formally learning the language. Prior to that, informally at home, learning, you know, picking up things here and there. But it's an interesting language in that the grammar, the syntax is very different, right, than anything I had learned, which up to that point was I'd learned Spanish informally at home. I'd learned French formally through schooling. And so my brain was trying to make sense of it in the ways that I had learned it in school. And what I quickly found out was I needed to dismantle that sort of organization system. For example, learning verbs and verb conjugations, because that just wasn't it. And so while that was the start of my journey, which was now what? It was the year 2000. So that was 23 years ago. And while that was the start of my journey, I would say it was a 6 month exposure that planted a seed, a very important seed. And then since then, I've been trying to like make my way back. It truly became sumamente importante para mí when I recently had a health scare, one that was, that very much made me face like important questions about what is my legacy? What do I want to do in this one and only lifetime? What's important for me and what's important for my family and my son? And what does it mean to pass on such an important part of my cultural heritage? And it was in those conversations with self, with others close to me, really, truly in the last 2 months, also with the time and space. Now, for the last couple of months, I've launched into my own independent coaching practice. So I actually have the time and space to explore and look for the resources to learn. It's been all of those things coming together that has really made it important to me. And I think that it was a time where I reached out to you too, right? And I said, you know, I was looking, I was like, where can I take these classes? Where can I learn? I was on Instagram, on the social media channels, like trying to find a place where I could link into. And I found a beautiful blossoming Quechua community, which is also the language of the region where my family is from. But it was harder for me to tap into an Aymara speaking community. And really, anywhere I saw a little link, I would try and reach out. And so really in the last 6 weeks, since I started my classes, have I really like put my head into it in a different way. It feels very special because it's such a, so many things had to be in place. And at the same time, once that path sort of cleared its way or the door opened, it was there, right? And I came to find, for example, my Yatichiri and my class through social media, right? So I'm in it now. It's more than language learning. I think that's why I feel it so deeply, because it is, let me put it this way. One of the most important things that my Yatichiri said at the start of our sessions together is he was telling us a story about indigenous languages in Bolivia and how they're just like the amount of indigenous languages at one time that there was. And then slowly, you know, through the period of colonization, slowly as people started moving and migrating to like languages get lost, you know, and he talked about a language that recently, you know, within the last 100 years, all but disappeared from the Altiplano region of Bolivia. And he said, we are here because we don't want that to be the story of our language. And he said, anytime a language dies, with it goes a way of seeing the world. an entire community's way of seeing the world, being with the world, interacting in the world, being with one another in the world. And it hit, like it hit so deeply. And so for me, learning Aymara probably as a kid was more like a thought, and a thought like, I want to know what my parents are saying behind my back, you know, like, because I couldn't understand them. And then as I started to grow more, became a real, to me, it's an expression of my ancestors. Like it is their voice. And how could I do anything but want to keep that voice alive?
That's amazing. Incredibly powerful how you came back to that language in your study abroad and then now into adulthood, and just the power of that language and how it will live on in you and your child as you pass this on. I have a couple of questions. We have a lot of listeners who are not just Spanish speakers as their heritage language. They have other heritage languages that may be more difficult to find resources for. They're indigenous languages or languages that just don't have as many resources in the U.S. What would be your recommendation to folks that are trying to develop their own language and also find resources for their children so that they can pass it on to them?
Great question. And really, this is the story of my journey back to Aymara, right? At least in terms of like connecting into resources and connecting into a community. So in particular, like throughout the pandemic, I, like many others, in a moment of deep isolation, right, felt really compelled to build community and was trying to figure that out. Also, at the same time, making important decisions about my son's first schooling experience. Do we want to send him to a monolingual, bilingual, dual language immersion? What kind of school setting do we want him to go to? And it was within that context that it felt very important for me to find and connect resources. And like I said earlier, where's one place I go to first? Google, try and find all. And I found summer courses at the University of Chicago, at NYU, in Quechua, right? And Quechua is another very important indigenous language in the region, in the Andean region where we grew up, or where my parents grew up and my ancestors, but it's not our language. Right. There are lots of similarities in many ways. It felt very important to learn Aymara. And so I kept looking. And it just came to a point where I was searching for social media accounts that had the words, like hashtags, keywords, Aymara. And what I tapped into was a Andean community online, particularly one on Instagram that I found that just, it was, you know, this is here's a place where the algorithm served me, right? Because I was suddenly like meeting people online who were also kids or a generation that grew up with parents who had immigrated to the U.S., who had a deep sense of finding comunidad, of finding like mi gente, right? And who were, doing all kinds of amazing things based on that need, that desire, and that drive. And so through that, really, and asking the simple question of like in those particular groups, especially about how I can connect back to language learning, that's how I ended up connecting with Ayeti Chiri, who is a professor in Bolivia and who runs online classes, as well as a professor whose main role is as a musician and rapper. And he also studied languages and speaks Aymara. And so he is also my Yatichiri. I have two Yatichiris now. And the groups serve different purposes. So all of that is to say is my advice would be get online, ask. You know, the worst that's going to happen is somebody's going to say, I'm sorry, I don't know, right? And even I don't know, but I know someone that might know, it gets you closer. Yeah. And that's really how I was able to connect with the language communities.
That's great. I wonder also, we have possibly some listeners here who are trying to connect to Aymara. if we can, in our show notes, share some of those resources so that they're able to connect and with the communities that you mentioned.
Absolutely. And Meadow, there's one other part that I didn't mention, and that's in part because it's emerging. So I went through this whole process, right? Mm-hmm. And even here in New York City, like I found Quechua or Quechua communities. So Quechua, you can find Quechua in Bolivia, in Peru, in Ecuador, right? And there are slight regional variations. And so I found lots of resources in Quechua, like Ecuadorian Quechua, here in New York City. And the Bolivian aspect of it was just so much harder. But for example, you know, when I thought about my son, there's a beautiful musical group that teaches song and music instruction in Quechua. And I was like, I want that for him too, right? So as part of that, something that I did and something that is still in its emerging state, but was to launch a virtual community for folks who, like me, are the sons and the daughters of ethnically Aymara Quechua folks from the Andean region who have come here and who maybe have never heard the indigenous languages spoken in their homes, or maybe have not been able to go back to Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, the Andean countries to hear it themselves, but do find, want, and have a deep desire to connect back. And so I've launched a community called the AYLLU, AYLLU, online right now. We're just on Instagram. And my dream for the community is really to be a hub for folks like me, who, you know, a mom who wants her child to hear stories read out loud in Aymara, who wants to make sure her child learns about the indigenous music of our culture and can be linked with a teacher, virtual or in person, right? Just those kinds of communities. It took me a while to get there. And once I was there, I was like, all right, we got to make this easier, right? Because there are so many great folks already out there making this work happen, right? And like, what would a hub look like, right? And to me, also, the reason why it's called the AYLLU is because the AYLLU is the most basic form of a social group in Aymara culture. So we are a clan and community-oriented culture. And so familial ties exist, obviously, within what we would consider the nuclear family, but they also exist within across neighbors, right? So a neighborhood could be an AYLLU. And what brings you together is your proximity. And what brings you together is that you help one another. So hoy yo, mañana tú, right? Like if today I might be the one that needs something, a resource, and you might be the one that has an abundance. And so you will share with me, and that when my time comes, I will share back. And it's this idea of reciprocity. It really ties into my own values too, with as it pertains to community. So that's my hope, that this emerging community online too, the AYLLU, will become a hub for folks who, like me, are interested either in connecting back directly or for our children as well.
That's amazing. And I think such a resource also for the language development, but also a way to be in community, right? A different way to be in relationship with each other that reflects the values of the language, right? When you say it's so much more than language learning, and that the language transmits just a different way of seeing and being in the world. That's such a beautiful resource that you've created, and we will definitely share information on where to find that in our show notes, because I know it will grow and grow the more that people hear about this, because I'm sure people just like you are looking for this. So that's beautiful. Tell me a bit about how you are translating all of this learning around language preservation, revitalization, to your efforts with raising a multilingual child. Like, what does that look like for you? What have been some of the challenges and some of the successes that you've had?
So early on, as I mentioned earlier, we had to make decisions here, like at home, right? So what language are we going to speak and what model are we going to follow? And gosh, I wish I were so organized to like be able, like I have all this knowledge about the ways to do it, but then reality hits and I'm like, oh my gosh, no, we speak Spanglish here at home. Myself, my mom is also involved in raising my son and plays a key part, right? And I think there are some assumptions that are sometimes made like that, oh, your mom must speak to him in Spanish all the time, right? And that's just not the case. Like, you know, we are very much a Spanish-English speaking home. And we did decide that dual language immersion was the best course for my son, just so that he would be able to hear and learn content in Spanish too. And so we were able to find great resources in New York City for that, for sure. English, Spanish, dual language immersion. And so I think it begins with the conversations at home. It begins with, you know, our tie to like, what are our values around language preservation, which I think it's just such a different way, because when I was growing up, and I know this was my parents' way of like making sure that I had everything that I needed to be successful in the world, but they didn't let me watch Spanish TV and Spanish language TV. And it's not because they didn't think that I needed to learn Spanish, but it was more because they wanted to make sure that my English was, you know, a certain way. And anyway, it's a total, una gira total here with how we raised my son. And I'm grateful for it. And I think in the last, you know, in the last couple of decades, as a society, we've come to view multilingual language learning in different ways. And it's such an asset now in a way that I think when my parents came in the 70s, and they were the only ones and, you know, the only Bolivians, for sure, it just wasn't. And so for us, it began with schooling. I had the chance to live in Chile for 2 years through my through professional experience. And when I was in Chile and traveling around South America, every place I went to, I would find children's books in Spanish and Aymara, like bilingual books there, because I knew I would not be able to find that in the States. And so, you know, a book here, two books there. And I had this, I know it might sound crazy because I'm, you know, my son wasn't even a thought at the time, but I knew how important that was. And I was a teacher too, right? So like early childhood, K kindergarten teacher, like I know that I had a vision for myself reading these books to my son. And when it finally happened, it's just one of these full circle moments, right? And then my mom picked up the book in Aymara in Spanish and read it to my son. There are so many sounds in Aymara that are very difficult for me. They're very guttural, back of the throat, not common to English or Spanish or any other language that I've learned. But my mom, when she speaks Aymara, it's a real name, right? And it was her first language. To hear and to see her reading a bedtime story to my son in both languages, I mean, sin palabras, right? So yeah, along the way, some important choices, finding the resources, and really like, it's so tied to our values and beliefs. Like, and when it's at that level, like you do what you need to do to make it happen.
That's beautiful. Also naming the vision that you had and the power of visions in terms of then becoming reality later down the road. The fact that you could even see that as a possibility is incredibly important. And sometimes we think that it's not possible, like reclaiming or reconnecting with our heritage language may seem so impossible because we haven't seen a model of it. But that first step is really having that vision and belief that it can happen. So thank you so much for sharing that. And you warmed my heart when you were describing your mom reading an Aymara to your son. It's so beautiful. So you also, as you talked about, you know, you're in the field of education, adult development. You actually studied the intersection of Latinx identity, adult development, adaptive leadership. And you've been working with educators to see how you can translate this identity affirming work into schools and communities. So can you tell me more about that work that you do and how you see that connected to your personal work around language and cultural preservation?
Yeah. So one thing, I mean, we've talked now about sort of my own journey, right? And I think it's important, as especially as someone who works in education or the education space, like really, I always try and put myself in the learner's seat, right? Because there's something about learning something new that is so important. I need to hold on to what it feels like to just learn and not necessarily know. And a large part of that is my journey into Aymara too. I'm seeing letters and sounds, hearing sounds like put together in ways that I'm not quite sure that I can do. I know I can in some future, but right now, and having that opportunity to struggle with and experience small successes, I mean, that is what I hope to see in any school or school community, you know, that I work with, that I support. Similarly, you know, when working with adults, you know, great, we can all think about that great session we attended or that great series, great professional development. Like there are certain things that I think are super important to that. One is that the ability to take on something new, right, be brought to that zone of proximal development, but have facilitators there to help, you know, navigate that. And so I think when I think about my process, my learning process, when I think about the types of experiences I want to work with schools, school districts, school leaders to engage with, I'm thinking about those different levels, right? How can this be a true learning experience that can bring us into the learning experiences that our children and students are having every single day? And so it's like this parallel process, right? And I think it can be done. I think B, it must be done, right? And when I think about this time now, you know, certainly in New York City, but when I think about where we are in the world too, how much language and language learning is just such an asset. I mean, what I try and share with folks is, especially those who are interested in learning language, right? Like you open up an entire new way of communicating with people that would not have existed before. And what can I learn from this group of people, you know, in a different way that I couldn't, if I couldn't even try or even access, right? And so I think for me, the most important part is, you know, helping schools, school districts, school leaders. And most recently, I've been working outside of the education space too. So also realizing, right, there are little translations from sector to sector in pursuit of learning that we can take from these individual experiences that we all have, that probably listeners to the podcast have too, right? And then elevate that and bring that into our professional spaces as well.
I was making so many connections too, in terms of, you know, professionally, that zone of development and learning, but also as a parent, any situation, showing that you're learning and that you're struggling and that you don't have all the answers, as a model for your children to not be afraid to dive into learning in that way as well. Because sometimes we can fall into this trap of like perfectionism or needing to do everything right or needing to not show a struggle. And so it translates in terms of language learning, in terms of parenting in any aspect or professionally, as you mentioned, across any sector that you're working in.
I wholeheartedly agree. Yes. And it's been my experience. And I'm just, as you're saying that, I'm imagining my son running up. So this is where I'm talking to you from now. It's the exact same place where I take my lessons every week. And my son will come up, and kid who's grown up through this pandemic Zoom teaching time too, he'll be interested in the computer. What's going on? Who are those people? Right. But mama, what's that? What are they saying? Mama, that's not Spanish, you know? And so I said, okay, let's practice together, right? And so when we're practicing lots of conversation or saying back phrases or new vocabulary words, he'll join in. And I remember the first time that he joined in, and my Yatichiri said, oh, what a blessing. You know, we have the whole family here learning together. And anytime having that open access, and he comes and he joins, and then sometimes he'll walk away, but then he'll come back. And like the moment where, you know, later, you know, as we're putting him to sleep, he says, for example, Nayah Brunoa, right? And I say, oh, Nayah Lisatatwa, which means he said to me, I am Bruno. And I said, I am Lizette in Aymara. All it took was hearing it once.
Yeah.
You know, and here we are building bridges, right? Building bridges back into our culture, into our people, to a country he's never been to, will go to, but not yet. You know, we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Vero. Like for me, I have a tremendous sense of gratitude for where I am in the world today in all aspects, and a tremendous reverence and respect for all of those who have come before me. And I learned that from my family. And I learned that from the ancestors. They, you know, people I have never met in person, but the stories that I hear, I am the sum of all of them. We are, you know, my son will be the sum of all of us. And to me, this language learning journey, it couldn't be any other way.
And everything that happened to get you to the point where you are now with your mm-hmm. child, building bridges back mm-hmm. and forward into the future, ensuring mm-hmm. this language mm-hmm. and culture has a place in what your future relatives and kin will be like in a better world than the one that we're in mm-hmm. today. Because you're better for having that relationship mm-hmm. to that part mm-hmm. of your identity and culture. I wonder if you've experienced, because maybe not directly, but we know systemically that Indigenous communities in Latin America and in the U.S. have faced a lot of trauma and a lot of terror that resulted in this disconnect from their language and their culture. Mm-hmm. And that can be passed down generationally, you know, that generational trauma mm-hmm. can come through and manifest in different ways. So since reconnecting to your Aymara language and culture, have you felt healing, or have you felt any type of kind of difference in your being and approach in the world?
Absolutely. I would say, I bet you could ask the people in my life right now too, over the last couple of months, how my life has just, you know, the movement it's made. Part of my language learning process, part of finding, you know, this ability, the resources, part of reconnecting back into every time I learn a new word, every time I put a new phrase together, it rebuilds so much inside of me personally and on a larger scale. To me, it is reclaiming and it is empowering again, right? Our people lived in this region for so many years and centuries before anyone else came in and had contact. And to think what happened in colonization during the colonial time, right? And what happened in particular to language and customs, and how much of that was just, you know, just decimated, right? And they thought we would forget. It's in you. They thought we would forget, and it's not possible. Here I am, what, 500 plus years later, and it is a drive and a hunger inside me to learn. No way we forgot. We can't, right? And I see that across Native communities, in the United States and beyond, First People of all of our across the world, right? What would it look like if we had the time and the wherewithal, the resources, right, to connect back into? And that's going to look different for different communities. For me, it has been an incredibly empowering and uplifting time. And there's definitely a sense of urgency around my learning. Like, and I know that with this, you know, I could go back to Bolivia and interact with my people in a completely different way. Having the ability to do that, you know, for me is the ultimate way to reclaim an identity that, you know, for all intents and purposes, folks wanted to do away with. We have an opportunity. I have an opportunity now to step into that and really elevate what it means to be Aymara, what it means to be Indigenous, what it means to be a Warmi, a woman in an Indigenous world in and outside an Indigenous world.
Thank you so much, Lisette, for sharing your story, your narrative, your work with us. It's been an incredibly empowering and uplifting conversation. I thank you so much for bringing that to this space. As we close out our conversation today, I'd love to hear what's bringing you joy these days that you want to share with our listeners.
So obviously, like, learning language and connecting back with my culture and seeing my son connect back to and seeing myself as a facilitator there too, you know, meeting others in this community has been a great joy. And, you know, like I said earlier too, this is a time of transition, a time of change in my life, and also a time of reclaiming on multiple levels. And so it feels very empowering. And in that, I think things that bring me joy are being out in nature and is a reconnection happening on all levels, for sure. Connecting with friends and family after so much time away. The joy is really in connection for me. And I think I just see it in so many places, in language and culture, with people, with ideas, and having just, you know, conversations about things that are important to us, and with children in school systems, and here at home.
That is very joyful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Please, please let us know where people can find out more about your work, what you do, and we will also have some of those resources in the show notes that you shared, but if you want to mention them again right now, just so that folks have them top of mind.
Yes. Yeah, so our emerging online community is called The IU on Instagram, the_IU, AYLLU. And through that, there will be lots of connections to many resources in the Aymara and Quechua first and second generation communities, particularly in the U.S., but also connecting back into our home countries. Thank you so much, Vero, for this time and for allowing me to come here and share my story, one of many. Also, Paisuma, which is thank you, and Aymara.
Many gracias. The pleasure was all ours. Thank you so much, Lisette.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.